All right. So we've spent two episodes building tools. Episode 195 was ground truth, where the answers come from. Episode 196 was grading, how you measure against those answers. Today we finish the set.
The trilogy closer.
The fundamentals trilogy. Yeah, gold, grading, and now, inputs. What the machine actually gets to look at.
I feel like I already know this one.
It looks at the video. It sees the players and the ball and the court.
It sees none of that.
None of it.
Zero. And that gap between what you see and what it sees is the whole episode. Because it turns out, the representation you hand a model sets the ceiling on what that model can possibly learn before a single parameter gets trained.
Okay, so what does it actually see?
Let me walk you through the inventory, because it's weirdly beautiful once you slow down. Picture a single frame of broadcast volleyball. You see 12 athletes, a ball, a court, a crowd. The machine sees 16 dots per person.
16 dots.
Key points, wrists, ankles, shoulders, hips, skeleton points connected by invisible lines. Every player reduced to a stick figure. And this layer is actually great. About 98% detection rate. It's the richest signal in the whole building.
So the machine sees a bunch of stick figures playing volleyball.
Playing something. It doesn't know it's volleyball. It just sees dots that move. Next layer, the ball. And here it gets rough. The ball is found in only about 27% of frames.
27%. It misses the ball 3/4 of the time.
Think about it from a broadcast camera 60 feet away. The ball is tiny. It's fast. On far side plays, it disappears behind bodies. In certain lighting, it blends into the crowd. So what the machine has isn't a ball. It's a dotted line. Dots where the ball was visible. Gaps where it wasn't.
Like trying to follow a conversation where you only hear every fourth word.
But strung through time, those dots make a usable trajectory. You can infer the arc, and this is worth saying out loud. The machine has never once seen a ball in flight. It has seen dots and inferred flight.
That's kind of haunting.
Last piece of the inventory, the court. The machine needs to know where things are on the actual court, in meters, not just where they are on the screen in pixels. So there's a mathematical mapping called a homography that translates between the two. You're taking a flat image and saying, this pixel corresponds to this spot on the ground.
That sounds straightforward.
The early version was built from 5 hand-picked anchor points for an entire match. The current one is dense. One mapping per frame. 355 of them across a match. And the starved version wasn't just less accurate, it was degenerate. Zero, the gold touches projected and bounds. Not somewhere off. Zero.
So you had this beautiful labeled data and a court mapping, just threw it all into the ocean.
Into the parking lot, technically, past the end lines by meters. And then you've got the broadcast grammar signals we covered back in episodes 4 and 5. Whistles, the score bar overlay, scene cuts. But those are callbacks, not new. The point is, this is the full inventory. Stick figures, a dotted line, and a math problem that says where the ground is.
You know what this reminds me of? Maths.
Yeah, let's go there, because it's the exact right frame. And I want to be clear, this is standard cartography knowledge, not something from the project. But it's the cleanest way to explain what's happening.
Every map of the Earth is a lie, right?
Every flat map of a round world trades something. The Mercator projection, the one most people grew up with on classroom walls, keeps angles accurate. If you draw a straight line on a Mercator map, it gives you the correct compass bearing for navigation. That's what it was designed for. Sailors needed it.
But the price is that Greenland looks the size of Africa.
When it's actually about 14 times smaller, the projection isn't buggy. It's answering the question it was built to answer. What compass heading do I sail? And answering it perfectly. But the question, how big is this landmass, gets a wildly wrong answer from the same map. Not because the map failed, but because that wasn't the question the projection was solving.
So the homography is a projection.
Exactly. Homography maps a flat plane. It answers, where on the ground is this pixel? And for things that are on the ground, feet, the ball at the moment of a dig, it's great. But a volleyball at the top of a serve toss is 4 meters off the ground.
And the projection doesn't know that.
It can't know that. It assumes everything is on the floor. So when you project a ball that's 4 meters in the air using a flat world mapping, it projects that contact way past where it really is. Measured, high serves, and attacks project to 19 to 26 meters deep on a 16-meter court.
The court is only 16 meters long and it's placing the ball at 26.
10 meters past the end line, off the end of the world, and this is the Greenland problem in miniature. The projection is answering the question it was designed for, perfectly, and that question is wrong for an airborne ball.
So what do you do?
You change the question. Instead of asking where is the ball, you ask where are the contacting player's feet, because feet really are on the ground. The homography works for feet, so the pipeline uses feet position for placing contacts on the court.
But feet aren't where the contact happens.
Right. And that's the trade. A setter's hands are ahead of their feet. An attacker, at full reach, contacts the ball a meter plus above and beyond their feet. A receiver's platform sits in front of the body. You're accepting a different kind of error. A body geometry error instead of a projection error. Feet beat ball, 25.4% accuracy versus 17.9%. But it's not solved. With zone lines only 2.67 meters apart, the different per skill error is why receives score worst of everything at 7%.
7%? That's almost random on a six-zone court.
It's rough, and there are levers that have been designed but never tested. Per skill offsets. If you know it's a set, shift the coordinate forward by some amount, using the wrist keep point at the moment the ball's trajectory changes direction, fitting the ball's arc in three dimensions instead of pretending the world is flat. All hypothesized, none of them tested yet.
So the flat world assumption is like choosing a Mercator. It's not wrong, it's just answering a question that doesn't match what you need for airborne objects.
And you can't fix it by making the model smarter. No amount of training will teach a neural network to overcome the fact that its input data places the ball 10 meters past the end line. The representation set the ceiling. The model never had a chance.
Okay, this is the part where I want to go back and relitigate some old failures. Because we had episodes earlier on where things just died, and now I'm wondering if it was this problem the whole time.
It was. Let me give you three results that only make sense through the representation lens. First one is actually good news. Remember how we've been worried about whether the system can even detect contacts?
Is the signal even in the question?
99.6% of true contacts have a pose motion candidate within half a second. The skeletons contain nearly every touch. Detection ceiling was never the perception layer. The stick figures see almost everything. It was everything downstream failing to select from that rich signal.
So the raw ingredients were fine, the kitchen just couldn't cook.
Second result, and this one rehabilitates something from episode 2 that bugged me for a long time, the skill classifiers. Remember those? We built them twice and they lost to a dumb pass-through both times.
The setup to fail story.
I remember feeling like the models were just bad.
The models weren't bad. The food was bad. The autopsy found that the contacting player selector, the thing that's supposed to identify who touched the ball, was feeding the classifiers bystanders. You'd have a gold-labeled attack, and the skeleton being analyzed showed zero jump. Because it was the wrong player. The model family didn't matter. You could have used the fanciest architecture on Earth, and it still would have lost to a pass-through, because it was being asked to classify an attack from a player who was standing still.
That's like trying to identify a singer by handing someone a recording of the audience.
And the model faithfully learned what it could from the audience recording. It just couldn't learn anything useful.
Okay, what's the third one?
The cross-venue collapse. This one has a second metaphor in it, so let me set it up. The first learned ranker. The model that tried to pick which candidate was the real contact worked at one venue and completely fell apart at a second venue. Two reasons, and they're both representation problems.
Hit me.
Reason 1. The ranker leaned on bounding box area in pixels. How big the player's box was on screen, and the second venue's camera was zoomed differently. The same player appeared nearly 5 times bigger in pixels. So a feature that meant this player is close to the action of venue 1 meant something completely different at venue 2.
Because the unit moved.
And this is where the second metaphor lands. Again, this is general practice, not from the project. But it's the cleanest frame. Think about comparing dollars across decades. If I tell you a movie earned $200 million in 1980 and another earned $200 million today, those are not the same amount of money. The unit, the dollar, changed under the number. Economists adjust for inflation to make the comparison meaningful. Same number, different real value, unless you normalize.
So comparing pixels across different camera zooms is like comparing dollars across decades without adjusting for inflation.
Exactly. The fix was scale-free features. ratios instead of raw pixel counts. Instead of this bounding box is 400 pixels tall, he used this bounding box is 0.3 times the screen height. The ratio means the same thing regardless of zoom level. That's your inflation adjustment, and coverage are covered.
That's kind of elegant. You don't fix the data, you fix the unit.
But there was a second poison in that rancor, and this one sneakier. One of the features encoded the old system's opinion. It was literally teaching the new model to agree with the thing it was supposed to replace.
Wait, so the student is being graded on how well they copy the teacher they were hired to replace?
That's the shape of it, the term for this in machine learning. And this is general practice, widely known, not a project discovery, is leakage. Information about the answer leaking into the input, and the screen for it is asking every feature one question. Could this feature exist without the answer already existing?
That's a sharp question.
If the answer is no, if the feature can only have that value because you already know the outcome, it's leaking, and the model will learn to rely on it instead of learning the actual patterns. It'll look great on your training data and collapse the moment it sees anything new.
Because it memorized the cheat sheet instead of learning the subject.
So here's the through line, and I want to say it clearly because it connects everything we just walked through. Units matter. Pixels don't travel between cameras. Ratios do. Ground plane coordinates don't describe airborne balls. Body relative ones might. Choosing the coordinate system is choosing what the model can possibly learn. The representation sets the ceiling before a single parameter is trained.
I keep coming back to the map thing.
You can have the best navigator in the world, but if you hand them a Mercator and ask how big is Greenland, they're going to get it wrong. Not because they're bad at navigating, because the map was answering a different question than they needed answered.
And that, honestly, is the refrain this episode exists for. Go back and listen to episode 2. The skill classifiers, the ranker collapse, all of it. Those were model failures. Those were cases where someone asked a question the input data couldn't express the answer to. The map was wrong for the territory.
And remember episode 4, the whole portable versus calibrated versus lock thing. Portability is a representation property.
That was this lesson before we had the vocabulary for it.
Same idea in episode 5. The signal answers a different question. The score bar telling you something true about the broadcast that isn't what you needed to know about the volleyball. Same lesson, just in the perception layer.
Alright, so where does this leave us?
We just finished 3 episodes of school.
Gold, grading inputs. What now?
Now the two halves of the series come together. The boundary problem, where does a rally start and stop? Its features are broadcast grammar, bar spans, score changes, scene cuts. The touch problem, who contacted the ball? Its features are body grammar, skeletons, trajectories, inflection points. Same lesson in both places. The representation is the decision, and the model is just what rides on top.
And the next live bells are basically representation bets.
The V4 splitter, whenever the lab reports on it, is a representation bet. Whether the corner boat graphic is even readable by the model. That's her representation question nobody's answered yet. The future touch model is a representation bet. Every single untested lever we mentioned, per-skill offsets, the wristed inflection, the 3D arc fit, those are all representation bets. Hypothesized, designed, none of them tested.
And underneath all of it.
Whether pose plus trajectory, reasoned over jointly, is even enough to crack the touch problem at all. That's the bet the whole ML reframe has been resting on, and we genuinely do not know. That's not a rhetorical we don't know. Nobody has tested it.
So we built all these tools, how to define truth, how to grade against it, what a machine can see, and the fundamental question is still open.
Wide open, and that's the honest close of this interlude. The series has now covered where truth comes from, how to grade against it, and what the machine can see. The next episode, stop being school. Whatever the lab reports next, a V4 clearing its line, or missing it again, gets measured with everything these 3 episodes just built.
I'm kind of nervous for it. What if V4 doesn't clear?
Then we learn something real about the ceiling. And that's not a bad outcome. That's representation telling you the truth. Which is the whole point.
Right, the map doesn't lie.
It just answers what it answers.
Next time, back to the live thread. The V4 splitter goes up against the same 25 windows and the frozen 80. And behind it, the bet that's been waiting since episode 4.
And now we actually have the vocabulary to read the scorecard when it comes back.
That's the point. That's why we did 3 episodes of school.
All right, we'll see you next time.
See you then.